But these are the secrets of each one of our lives. Our mothers are not visible. We don't talk about our mothers in this way.
Hi, welcome to Boomer Bedtime Stories. I'm your host, Michelle Hall. On our last episode, entitled The Good Lord Willing, I chatted with Robert Norris, who had just published a memoir that was not only about his own life, but was also about his mother's. In today's episode, Story Gold, How Telling Your Mother's Story Changes Everything, we'll be picking up the theme of writing about your mother, but from a completely different angle. Today's Boomer guest, Marilyn Norrie, is an actor, writer, and story editor who has created a remarkable program. Well, not really a program, she actually calls it a recipe. A recipe for understanding who your mother really is. Originally working with fellow actors, Marilyn crafted a collection of mother stories into a stage play. Now Marilyn works with groups of people interested in diving deeper into who they are as individuals by understanding who their mother actually was. In the process of doing this work, Marilyn has discovered that all of our mothers become real people in themselves and no longer simply supporting characters in our own personal life drama.
Hi, Marilyn. Nice to have you on the show today.
Thanks, Michelle.
You've started an amazing program called the Mother's Story Program, and you started that in 2004.
Yes.
And that's an impressive amount of time to keep a program going. Tell me a little bit what inspired you to create that program and what keeps you still engaged in it.
Well, I'm an actor and a writer and a story editor, dramaturg. That's an editor of plays and screenplays. And in 2004, I was just bored and frustrated with the roles for women that I saw. There weren't a lot, and what there were often simple. They were not the complications that, as an actor, you really want to chew on for a bit. So I sent out a request to my friends. I just thought, okay, let's find out the stories that are out there. And I said, write the story of your mother's life from beginning to end. Just the facts, not your opinion, not your issues, not whether you think she was a good mother or a bad one, or your perspective. It's not about you. It's about her. Write it in 2,000 words, because that was a nice size. And I had no idea what was going to come back. I thought maybe that most of these people that I was talking to, because we were in the same city, we're in the same profession, that their mothers' lives would be kind of like mine. No, not at all. Not at all.
Totally different.
But these are the secrets of each one of our lives. Our mothers are not visible. We don't talk about our mothers in this way. I was looking for women's history. I was looking for characters. And what I got back, it's like a movie. Every story, 3.5 pages long, because what I was asking for was essentially a character arc where we trace a character through a script and tracking the emotional and physical journey of that character. What we got was that these are the character arcs of living people. And it just became a short form. Everybody knows how movies work. It's amazing. They don't really understand books or things like that, but everybody knows how movies are and whether it works or not. And this has turned out to be a writing recipe that anybody, doesn't matter whether you know, you feel you can write or not, you can do it.
I love the way you call it a writing recipe. There's a lot of writing coaches out in the world and they might work very differently, but you've got a recipe. Tell me about that.
Well, I could just as easy a formula, or I could call it an algorithm, just get really current and trendy about it. But I thought, okay, let's just go old school. Let's honor the mothers and call it a recipe.
And so the recipe is very simple. Do you write it in a certain period of time, or do you have a longer period of time to write it?
Whatever you want. These are the stories. When I say just the facts, they're the stories that you heard while you were doing the dishes or on the going to the store. And they're the stories we take for granted about our mother, her parents, what she did at school, what they, you know, but they are scattered around our heads. They're scattered all through our brains. We haven't put them in order. Our brains look like a hoarder's house. You know, everything is just shoved in there. And until you actually put it together into a story, you just don't know how the cause and effect of a person's life was. What I suggest to people is to sit down and write it as fast as you can. So you don't get stopped. You don't get emotional. You don't get all the ways that you can get bogged down in telling a story, especially when there are so many memories and emotions around it. But it stick to the facts. And what happened next? What happened next? What happened next? What are the plot points of my mother's life? It's very bizarre to consider it, but it works.
And what has been the impact on people? Is that mostly women are writing these stories? Or do you have men writing these stories as well?
It's mostly women, but certainly anyone with a mother.
That would be all of us.
That would be all of us. Anyone with a mother can do this. And that, I'm encouraging everyone to do this because people who say, oh, my mother, she was just a mom. And I say, oh, yes. And the Taj Mahal is just a house. People say, I don't think my mother has much of a story. And you go, oh, my goodness, she doesn't know what she's got. It is mostly women have been doing this, but men can do it as well. And what happens for everybody is that they see their mother in a different way. They see her as a human being rather than that icon that they've been holding on to, the Virgin Mary, the Marge Simpson, the demon harpy woman. They see her as a human being who was not given the special book on parenting and was making things up as she went along. And in her life had brushes with fate in different ways and had to make choices for different reasons. You can see her life as a singularity. And then you can see your own life. Then you can see how much of her story you've taken on as your own, and you don't need to. You can see how magic that was, the things that happened. And you can see the magic in your own life, the things that happen in that way. When you are a witness to your mother, you cease to be her critic.
There must be many, many people who are stuck in the fact that they may have had a challenging relationship with their mother. But I love the fact that it's not about you. It's about your mother and her story.
And what people find is that then they can stop being a critic of themselves. There are people whose mothers told stories and they, you know, they think, oh my God, I've got it all. You know, and they write it all down. Then they have to figure out how to fit it into 2,000 words. They have to look at their mother as a character going through something rather than just being a series of stories. But the people who have had difficult relationships with their mothers, whose mothers were going through stuff that was painful, or they don't like her. They don't like her opinions. They don't like her background. They don't like anything about her. They benefit the most from doing this because they get out of their own feelings. They get out of their own judgment. Being mad at mom serves no one. And you don't have to tell anybody that you're writing her story. You don't tell mom. You don't tell anybody. You just do it for yourself. But what happens is that when it's not about you, you end up seeing yourself without that same filter on yourself that you've been carrying around. You go, you know what? I'm not as bad as I thought. I'm actually better or worse or, you know, whatever it is like that. You could see your life as a series of events.
Interesting. For people whose mothers are still alive, have you seen that it changes their relationship with their mother after they've done it?
That's what I have found. There's one story in particular where the mother read the story and she says, well, I feel sorry for all of those poor unfortunates who have daughters who are writing stories like this. Most of the time, the mothers say, I'm so amazed that you were actually paying attention. Most of the mothers are amazed that they have been made visible. Some people are having a hard time with that. It's been quite remarkable because what it does is that you have that conversation. You write your story as fast as you can, and then you see what you know, and then you see what you don't know. And then you've got the start of the conversation. You say, I don't know about this. And then you ask your mom if she's around or anybody else in the family. Well, what happened then? What was going on then? And there's debates and whatever. My relationship with my mother went through many evolutions. I was afraid to tell her story because She was a woman of great accomplishment. But if I was telling her story, I wanted to talk about the depression and anxiety that she had around what was the challenge she had in accomplishing those things. Something about me that I had to get 40 other women to write their mother's story so that I could write mine, slip it into the middle and hand the whole package to my mom. See, mom, other women have gone through stuff like you. You will be a model of resilience for other people. And she says, I don't care what strangers think about me. What about the neighbors? And that's it. You know, when we're talking now about it only gets better and we're talking about mental health challenges, we're talking about all that stuff. It's really, really necessary to tell those stories with truth, but it's hard.
It's a wonderful project that you've taken on, but it's taken on many different forms as well, right? You've got it as online programs, you have it as come and be in person programs, you have Zoom programs, and you've also created anthologies, have you not?
Yeah, we've published 3 anthologies. The first is the originals, which is the actors in Vancouver. They all kind of came out of campaigns, the anthologies. The second one came from North Vancouver, so it's the mothers of a community. The third one we just published, it's men and women, and they are in different parts of the world. And all of them lost their mothers when they were children. And that was working with a therapist guiding them through that. It's quite extraordinary because they wrote their mother's stories. Then they wrote an essay on what the impact of writing their story was on them. And it's quite extraordinary because a lot of those mothers had hard lives. Not necessarily. Some of them, you know, it was a car accident. It was a breast cancer. It was this. It was that. It was that. But in order to write the stories, there was a lot of a reunification of families because the writer now had an assignment to talk to mom's family that they hadn't talked to in a long time and say, okay, can I ask you about this on her childhood, on the stuff that they hadn't asked? And so all of a sudden they were connected again. One of the people in this book said it was a paradigm shift for them that they had lived their lives without a mother, as if they had no mother. And then they wrote her, and now they have a mother.
Wow, very interesting.
You know, if you think about it, history was being made right outside her window. And it's one woman's perspective on those events. As somebody said, well, what does my mother have to do with women's history? And I said, well, she's a woman. She was there. She participated. But our idea of storytelling is that's only for the important people, for the accomplished people, for the rich people, for the whoever. Well, we're on a digital world now. We can record the stories of everyone. Joe Walsh from the Eagles, somebody said, wasn't that crazy for you? Like all of these things coming at you and you had to react and react and react. Wasn't that a crazy life that you had in that world? And he said, well, it's a funny thing. When you're living your life forward, it really feels chaotic. But if you turn around and look at it, it looks like a well-ordered novel.
I love how you say that if we don't share our mother's stories, then we won't have any stories about women. And we'll have to watch car chases and movies forever and ever. Which is really bringing the women's perspective. It's like, you know, okay, the little boys want to play with their cars, but let's talk about something real.
It's true. When you turn around and look at it, you go, oh, well, I didn't know what was going to happen next, but this did. And then that became the story. That's the kind of perspective that you start seeing on your own life. After you've written that of one person's life, who you know, you go, okay, there's more going on here.
What about your own mother? When you started to write that down, how did that open up things for you, or did it?
Well, everyone in my family jumped in and agreed or disagreed. I know my father, he had never really thought about how my mother had 4 children in 5 years and moved 4 times. And, you know, maybe that was a bit of a stress for her. What happened, though, is that I wrote about 5 drafts and she rewrote it twice. And we wanted to get it right. I was figuring out the rules of this whole project while working with her. And she says, I don't remember saying that. I don't even think I did. I said, well, I remember. So I'm putting it in because this is an important story for me. And she wrote her mother's story. And she said, oh, now I see what you mean. She said, it's very therapeutic. I had a little cry. I now see that this isn't about me. It's about you. And I said, well, yeah, that's it. It's about me making sense of your life, not me writing the eulogy, the grand statement, the grand story. But it is about those stories, the stories that I grew up on that influenced me. The things that I admired about her were the things that she hated about herself. This is why we went through so many drafts. You know, whenever I told her story on stage or in the books and stuff, people just loved her, and she just couldn't understand that. She wanted to be a methodical and organized person. She didn't want to be known as being creative.
Interesting. Did you see some kind of correlation with how people wrote about their mother and who they are? And did that shift as well?
It fundamentally did. In our initial group of 40 women, we had two people whose mothers died of alcohol poisoning, two mothers that were schizophrenic, two people whose mothers died when their children were 10, 11. What it was within all cases is that you make peace with who your mother was. When you figure out how to tell that story, you can make peace with it. One of the big stories that we had was with Chief Janice George. And she came and she said, well, I'd like to write my grandmother's story because I think it's important. I said, okay, well, that's fine. And then she said, because it's all the details of my mother's life that I don't really want to get into. And I went, okay. And I said, well, what was going on with your mother's life? Her mother and her father and her sister and her son were driving their car up to Squamish in 1980, and the bridge went out and they all died. And it was such a huge event. The whole North Van, the Squamish community just couldn't absorb it. And so Janice told me the story. I said, well, let's start at the beginning. You know, your mom, and she was born here, and this and that. As she was telling me the story, I wrote it all out and I said, there. It was transformative for her because now suddenly she didn't see her mom in terms of the tragedy of her death.
Ooh.
She saw her mom had six daughters in a two-bedroom house down on the reserve, on the Capilano Reserve, and they had a baseball team, and her mom was a killer pitcher, and they did all of these circuits of championship games, and they had the whole family and a couple of aunts on a baseball team, and the winnings would pay for the trip. Her mom could feed 200 people on 3 hours' notice. That's the person now who is remembered rather than the circumstance of her death.
That's really fascinating. And now you are still working on this. I mean, you started in 2004 and you're still working on this project. And now what's the Mother's Lab? Is that still going on?
I call it that because I don't know what we're talking about. And we are figuring out new ways that we could talk about all of this stuff. It still doesn't go down to that personal thing now of individuals learning about themselves and learning about the complexity and also the simplicity of women's lives. We call them the extraordinary lives of ordinary women. And I am still doing it. I would like to go around the world now and talk to people in different communities, like in India, in Bangladesh. Do a project there. Write your mother's story. Write about what her life was like and then what your life is like. This means by which we can gather statistics through the stories that we tell. There are so many experiments and that kind of thing done through history where they were only collecting the information from men about what happened and how much education and how much this and that and what was your economic standing and how things changed. We can't go back in history and find that information, but we can tell the stories right now.
Yes, I agree. That's really why I wanted to start the Boomer Bedtime Stories, is we've got great stories. Let's tell them. Let's share them. There's something also that I was interested in. If you're telling your mother's story, it is also a legacy that is going to go down to your children and your grandchildren and be passed down in a very concrete form, because within two generations, we lose our history.
My parents, they heard all the oral history of their families. They could tell the stories from five generations back. They love genealogy. They love all of that stuff. My dad's saying, we've got the facts. We're not saving the stories. Well, that was their TV. Absolutely right. On the Boomer Bedtime Stories, this wealth. When we're in the entertainment business, it seems like so often things are derivative.
Yes.
It's like, oh yeah, she was a mom and she cried. What else? Come on.
Yes.
Come on. And there's such a wealth of how people have lived. And every single one of the stories that we have had coming into our archive has been unique. Every single one of them. There are no generic mothers. There are no generic people. People write their mother's story, then they write their father's story. Yeah, then they've got something. You know what is a great thing? If you've got a parent who has dementia or Alzheimer's and is sitting in a care facility, you write their story, you hand that to the caregivers, and you say, this is who that person is. You hand that to your grandkids, your kids, and say, that is not an old person who doesn't make sense. This is who that person is.
I knew a person, and her mother had dementia, and she had somebody write her mother's story. And then the caregivers would read the mother's story to her.
Yes.
When they would tell the story of how she met her husband, the mother would go, oh, I love this story. And it was her own story, but she had dementia and she couldn't recall it, but she loved to hear it again, even though she herself could no longer identify with that. It's such a beautiful thing to do.
These are stories about relationships. They're not stories about accomplishments. They're stories about relationships. And that's the thing we do in movies, right? It's the relationships and how they change. That's the living thing. Now, I'll tell you that book, Gone Too Soon, our third anthology, the motivation that a lot of them had was to be able to have this story out and available for other children who were going through the same situation. And that was the same thing with the mother who had schizophrenia, is to say, I felt so alone. I didn't know that anyone had ever gone through anything like this. I want my story to be out there so that the kids in the future will know that they are not alone, that families do survive, that there is lots of love, and it's really hard, but you figure it out. You figure it out. And that kind of testimony is wisdom.
Yes.
If we're not collecting the wisdom of our mothers, then what?
Are the people who are coming forward to tell their mother's stories, are they of a certain generation, or do you have a full range from very young to much older people, or is it mostly as we get older, we want to reflect back on our mothers?
Your demographic is my demographic to a large degree. I have worked with younger people, and one of the things with younger people is to write their mother's story until she reached the age of 18, because the mums are not finished yet.
Okay.
And that's a whole thing. I am not finished yet. Certainly anybody that's over 40, 45 starts to ask, what's the point? What does this mean? What am I going to do next? The model was that you look after your grandchildren and go on some cruises and that's it. When I was in my 20s, I looked around and I thought, why are all the old women around me? They're either bitter, they're angry, or they're invisible. There are no role models for me. I got 30 more years of clanking around on this earth. What did other women do in this time of their lives? I want to know that. But I also want to have that story for me of when we talk about the intergenerational trauma. This is a fun thing to talk about now. You can see your intergenerational trauma when you write it down. You go, oh my God, yes, okay, I can see that. You can see your intergenerational strengths. You can see the attitudes. And there's things that you go, okay, I've written this down. I do not want this to happen ever again. This is not going to be a secret in my family anymore. Let's get rid of it.
Fascinating, fascinating. Did you have a story that you would share with us?
I would like to tell you a story. I thought about this in the middle of the night. I count myself as a boomer, but I was born in 1957. So I was always at the tail end. But it just felt when I was growing up that I was so close, but so far away from where the action was happening. I just didn't feel like I was part of anything. I remember when I was in grade 2, and we had a passionate conversation in the class about the Vietnam War and draft dodgers and people having to go away and fight. And the teacher stopped us. We're in Canada. We are not in the Vietnam War, and Canadians are not drafted. And that was just a revelation to me. I had no idea, because that's what the news was that we were getting. But I was in Brampton, Ontario. I wasn't even in Toronto. There was one time when we were in Toronto, my mom and I were going to the dentist, and I went, look, there's Yorkville Avenue. Yorkville Avenue is over there. And my mom says, shut up, we're going to the dentist.
Yorkville, for those who don't know, was the Haight-Ashbury of Canada in the 1960s. It was in the many nightclubs and coffee houses that some of Canada's and the world's most notable musical talents got their start. I remember seeing a very young Joni Mitchell play at the Riverboat in a long, sparkly dress that we teens oohed and awed over. Neil Young, Gordon Lightfoot, Ian and Sylvia, Bruce Coburn, Murray McLaughlin, Leonard Cohen, and Buffy St. Marie were among just some of the renowned Canadian musicians who made Yorkville the happening place to be. American artists such as John Lee Hooker, James Taylor, Tim Hardin, Simon and Garfunkel, and Phil Oakes also performed regularly in Yorkville.
We're not going to Yorkville Avenue. I couldn't go there. I would listen to the Beach Boys and Surfing and Gidget and Moondoggy, the protest songs, the hippies, the rallies, the beatniks. I remember I said to my mom, this one day I said to my mom, okay, I want to go to Woodstock. And she said, you're 12. So that was that. And I wasn't the kind of 12 who would cross an international border and go and follow my dreams. I wasn't that kind of a girl. 25 years later, I'm in Vancouver. I'm an actor. I got a gig. I got to sublet my apartment. And this cute guy comes by. He's a friend of one of the neighbors. He's living on his boat. He's thinking maybe it's going to be too cold to stay on his boat over the winter. So we start chatting, and then we start chatting over dinner, and then talking and talking and talking and talking. And he grew up in Los Angeles. And I said, oh, wow, Los Angeles, like with the Beach Boys. And he said, Beach Boys surfing? No, they lived in Hawthorne. Hawthorne was about cars. I was in Redondo Beach. We were surfing. Big heavy boards, and they were so heavy, and it was really cold. We didn't have wetsuits to wear, but the guys in the neighborhood, they would steal their sister's roller skates and take them apart and nail them to the bottom of boards so that they could practice all of the moves with these boards down the street when the surf wasn't running. His friends like George Dumashausen and Terrible Terry of Torrance. And the three of them went down to Tijuana one night because they were going to get the car, the upholstery on George Dumashausen's car. They did the whole tuck and roll, including the dashboard, in one night. Then these three guys are wandering around. They're all teenagers, and they don't have enough money to stay anywhere, so the police take them in, and then they have to get out in the next morning and try and get their car back. And then George Dumashausen, he's playing drums for Dick and the Deltones. And I went, wait, how did that happen? How am I talking to you doing this? And I said, did you go to Woodstock? And he said, no, he didn't go to Woodstock, because a few years earlier, he was driving up to see his mom in San Francisco, and he stopped in Esalen. And on the way, and there was these two guys that were playing, probably their second gig. Yeah, that was Simon and Garfunkel. And the short guy, he really didn't like the tall guy. I thought they had something. They weren't a band or anything like that. But when I got to my mom's house, she's living near Haight-Ashbury. I go over the panhandle, it's filled with hippies, and they all have their tents out. It's just love and peace going on, and it's kind of cool. But there was this one guy who was named Super Spade, and everybody loved him because he would sell drugs really, really cheap. because he wanted everyone to be happy, and there were psychedelics, you know, and he wanted everybody's consciousness raised and everything to be wonderful. And then one day he was found murdered in a sleeping bag. And he says, I saw that and I knew that the sharks had come to feed on the minnows, and this was not going to be good. So when I was driving across Canada in my VW van with my first wife, we were looking for where we wanted to live. I was close to Woodstock. I could have gone, but the FBI were after me. I just knew that there was just going to be a lot of sharks around there, and it was not going to be a good thing. And I said, you're driving across Canada in a VW van? And he said, yeah, I'm a draft dodger. And I just thought, I love this man. I love this man. I want all of these stories in my life too. So I had to marry him.
It was an amazing time. You've really captured it beautifully. Canada got so many draft dodgers.
Canada's culture is because of the draft dodgers, all the people who were creative and perhaps gay and perhaps idealistic. They started the Canada Council. They run all of the major art institutions still in Canada.
We benefited greatly. That's a wonderful story. One of the things that really intrigues me is that as we get older, I feel from more and more people this urge, this need, almost a genetic time to tell our stories. And I worry a little bit that perhaps the younger generation aren't interested, that they're distracted, that it's not that interesting. And yet I always found it fascinating, for example, to listen to my grandparents' stories, perhaps more than my parents' stories. I was too involved in my parents' stories, but to listen to my grandparents' stories was fascinating, a different time. I think that it's really important, and that's why I started Boomer Bedtime Stories. These stories need to be gathered, and then we can share them, whether they're directly to our families or just indirectly to the next generation that comes down the pike, as it were.
I fully agree with you on that. And I find that today it's not even just that younger people don't want to listen. Yeah, they got their own things going on. But with this digital revolution that we're involved in right now, I just feel like what we lived through is going away. It's just disappearing. And that's one of the things why I wanted to get women's stories written and saved, because we got to know how to run communities. We have to know how to be the glue in a family. When families mean so many different things now, a lot of young people think that anything in the past is useless. If we don't go to the bank, we use our cards, we don't do these things, we don't have a women's institute that runs things, we don't have all of those things, they just went away so fast. We don't have churches where we go and hang out with other people and go for dates, the socials, we don't have all of that stuff. And a lot of people even think that the past is dangerous, that it's corrupt, it's bankrupt. And we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Technology has brought a lot of fun things. We couldn't have had a conversation like this a little while ago, but we lose so much by losing community.
It's amazing that thing, and like somebody was calling it the collective families. I think in North America, we're doing that individual thing so much, so fast. And what we have lost is, why bother getting together? Why bother having community? When you have a more traditional family, there are pros and cons with it. Does your traditional family have to be a dad and a mom? Well, not necessarily. We're finding out. But the importance of we are together. I know a lot of people in therapy and recovery and stuff like that, and they say those mothers are codependent. There's nothing there. That's not a real thing. That's a bad thing. And it's like, yeah, but a lot of things happened because people did care about being the glue. And how do we be the glue for one another? Somebody says, come here and let's do it. And we just say, okay, who's here? You can write your whole mother's story in 2 hours. It gets you started. You're going to edit it later because you're not going for the definitive story of everything. You're just getting the basics down out of your head onto the page. So that's what I'm doing mostly now, is doing these live or Zoom conversations with groups. It's something that's very interesting. In the same way that I started with actors, my friends in my profession, there are people in their professions. It's like, well, let's write a book about our mothers. Let's write a book about our community. Let's write a book about anything, reason why we are together on this. Certainly anybody that wants to talk about those things can come to our website, mymotherstory.org. You can write your mother's story without telling anybody. You can just do it for yourself. And it is for men and women. And the people who have problem relationships, it is phenomenal. Your mom doesn't change. As I said before, you just find peace with her. You just find peace with whatever is going on there. You see her as an adult, as a human being. And that's whether she's alive or dead. You can redeem that relationship just by telling her story. I would love to have them all in my archive. I would love to have them submitted. It's so much gold, story gold. If anybody has any ideas that they would like to do, send me an email. Let's talk.
Thanks so much, Marilyn. When we did the interview last December, Marilyn was preparing for her TEDx Surrey talk. For links to that talk and to her My Mother's Story website, and to find out how you can participate in one of Marilyn's workshops, go to BoomerBedtimeStoryRadio.com and click on the Story Gold episode. You can follow her recipe and write out your own mother's story to be added to the archives, as well as other projects that the very entrepreneurial Marilyn is up to. And remember, if you or someone you know has a great story to share on this podcast, please reach out and connect with us at stories@boomerbedtimestoryradio.com. Today's show is produced, written, and edited by yours truly, Michelle Hall. Music by Sweet KR, Alexi, Light Saturation, Julius H., The Mountain, Music Town, and Lemon Music Studio on Pixabay.com. Sound effects are from freesound.org. I'm your host, Michelle Hall. Till next time, keep sharing your stories, because that's where the heart of life is.